Good morning. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'll be here this week filling in for Joy Cardine. It was just about 2 years ago that the Obama administration announced new fuel standards for cars and light trucks beginning in 2012. Last week, the president announced another increase in those standards, this time beginning in 2017.
Companies here today have endorsed our plan to continue increasing the mileage on their cars and trucks over the next 15 years. We've set an aggressive target, and the companies here are stepping up to the plate. By 2025, the average fuel economy of their vehicles will nearly double to almost 55 miles per gallon.
John McElroy is with us this hour to tell us about the challenges that that figure represents and the reality it represents as well. McElroy is an automotive journalist and the host of Autoline Daily, and we've got a link to Autoline Daily webcasts on our program notes and Facebook pages. So what do you think about the higher fuel standards? Do you think the government should be focusing on this right now, essentially forcing auto companies that have other challenges of their own to meet a new mandated challenge? Or do you think it's about time that saving fuel and cutting down on pollution are worth this effort? You can join in the discussion at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Don't forget that email works, too. That address is talk@wpr.org. And you can also follow the Joy Cardine Show on Facebook, if you like. John McElroy, good morning.
Good morning, Gene. Thanks for having me here today.
Sure. It's great to have you along. I want to start with kind of a thumbnail sketch of fuel efficiency standards, of these CAFE standards, because for a long time, the auto industry didn't really have to worry too much about fuel economy.
Well, for a long time, it didn't. But in fact, of matter, the corporate average fuel economy standards, CAFE as it's called in the business, started in 1978. And over the decades, the level has been raised continuously, as we've seen the Obama administration raise them yet again.
And it is some pretty lofty goals right now. Where are we at this moment in time, is in 2011, where are we in terms of fuel standards for cars and light trucks?
Right now, what the industry has to achieve is about a 35 mile per gallon average by 2016. It varies a little bit between cars and trucks, but the average for the industry is about 35 miles per gallon.
Now, when we're talking averages here, because, and that's, I think, an important thing to focus on for a moment or two, because we all know there's a lot of SUVs out there. There are a lot of other vehicles out there that don't get anything close to 35 miles a gallon.
That's exactly right. So the standard applies on a sales-weighted basis. And what that means is that you have to look at the vehicles that are actually sold and in which numbers and average that out. It's not as if you would go to, say, like a showroom of one of the brands and average out what's in the showroom. It's all based on what actually gets sold.
Now, one of the things I want to talk about, too, is I saw in, I think, one of your webcasts, actually, that the changes we're talking about now, the ones coming up in 2017, would require improvements in fuel economy that the industry has never achieved in this sort of compressed time frame before.
That's exactly right. There was an interesting report that came out of Bloomberg that noted over the last 100 years, the maximum rate on an annual basis that the industry has achieved is about 2%. And yet these new standards, the post-2016 standards, would force cars to improve at an annual rate of 5% and trucks and SUVs to improve at a rate of 3.5%. So that's the real question now is, can the auto industry, all automakers, not just the Americans, but the Japanese, the Koreans, the Europeans, can they increase at a rate that they've never yet achieved before?
And how did automakers agree to this? I mean, where are they in all the negotiations? They're all not American companies. So what is the U.S. doing setting these standards that they all have to meet?
Well, in most of the rest of the world, there are no fuel economy standards, or have not been until very recently. And in fact, most of them are not even fuel economy standards. They're CO2 standards. And the reason that the rest of the world, notably Europe, has never had fuel economy standards before is that the price of gasoline or diesel is so high, anywhere from $8 to $10 a gallon, depending on the country you're talking about, people are simply highly motivated to go out and purchase the most fuel-efficient vehicles that they can. Same pretty much applies to Japan. The price of fuel is not quite as high there, but between $5 and $6 a gallon. So again, people are highly motivated to go out and buy very high fuel-efficient cars. As I noted, Europe recently, in the last decade, has added CO2 standards, which are almost the equivalent of a fuel economy standard, because by and large, the only known way to reduce CO2 emissions in a car is simply to burn less fuel, i.e. get better fuel economy.
And so, and of course, in Europe, they use off a lot of diesel, a lot of different kinds of fuel and things like that, but a lot more pollution issues, too.
That was true until recently. The industry now builds mainly in Europe, and you're absolutely right. About half of all the cars in Europe use a diesel engine. But these aren't the noisy, smoky, slow diesels of years past. These are what they refer to as clean diesels. And in fact of matter, in the U.S. right now, diesel engines in passenger cars have to meet the same standards that gasoline engines do when it comes to any kind of emissions. And diesels also produce less CO2 than gasoline engines do by and large. And that's another reason why the Europeans really have been emphasizing diesel.
And we can't forget about the mileage that a diesel engine can come up with.
Exactly right. It's an inherently more fuel-efficient engine. So in much of Europe, the price of diesel is normally cheaper than gasoline. And in some countries, like Italy and France, there's even been tax advantages to buying cars with diesel engines.
So here in the U.S., the Obama administration has made this decision to move forward on fuel efficiency standards. And, you know, they've done it before. Just 2 years ago, the Obama administration announced some new fuel standards. Now they've upped the ante again. How are the auto companies reacting to this? Obviously, they were a part of these negotiations. But the numbers we're talking about here seem awfully lofty, I think, to a lot of people who are looking at them. Maybe not lofty enough to others, but certainly for the people that have to come up with these mileage figures, it's going to be a challenge. Is it something that they think is actually possible?
In their heart of hearts, I think they would say, no, they don't. And the reason I say that is one of the things that the auto industry insisted on in these negotiations was that there be a midterm review halfway through the period of these being implemented. The automakers insisted that there be a review where both the industry and others, including the administration, would review whether indeed these standards are achievable and that they're achievable at a level that people can literally afford these cars. Achieving these high standards is not a technology issue. It really comes down to a cost issue and how quickly this new technology can be tooled up and sold in big numbers. So if it were not for that midterm review, I think the industry would have really dug in its heels even more. And based on a handful of automakers that I've talked to, at least right now, they do believe that those standards will be capped at the time of the review or maybe even reduced.
So I don't know if this is the right term. Is that an escape clause we're talking about in 2021?
That's a great way to put it, is an escape clause. And then there's other loopholes, is the term I would use, too, where the industry gets credits for making hybrids and electric cars, plug-ins and the like. We still don't know the full details of everything that's involved in this this new CAFE agreement. But in the past, up through at least right now, automakers that built flex fuel vehicles, ones that could run on 85% ethanol, also got credits that helped them achieve these targets.
All right, lots to talk about. John McElroy is with us today. He is an automotive journalist, the host of Autoline Daily, and we're talking about new fuel efficiency standards for cars and trucks sold here in the United States. And we'll be taking your calls and your comments at 800-642-1234 if you would like to weigh in on this. Wisconsin weather for the rest of this Tuesday. It is going to be hot and humid today. Look for a chance of some severe storms in the northern two-thirds of Wisconsin this morning. Highs are going to range from the mid-80s up into the mid-90s. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain in the southeastern part of the state. Lows back down into the 60s. And then tomorrow, it'll be sunny and warm again, although not quite as warm as the past few days. Highs will be mostly in the 80s around Wisconsin. The extended forecast Thursday through Saturday, warm but not quite as humid with a chance of some scattered rain. Around Wisconsin, it's warming up already at 75 in Green Bay, 69 degrees in Superior, 72 in Wausau. It's 76 in Oshkosh, 75 in Eau Claire. La Crosse reports 80, Madison 78 degrees, and in Milwaukee, it is 74. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Contributors to WPR include Ganchert Nursery and Landscapes, offering full-service landscape design and installation to Madison and surrounding communities, specializing in renovation of existing landscapes. Learn more at ganchert.com.
Twenty minutes past 6 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, here today filling in for Joy Cardine. We're talking about new fuel efficiency standards for cars and light trucks beginning in 2017. President Obama announcing some of those new standards just a week or so ago, and within 15 years or so, he says the average fuel economy of the American fleet could be somewhere in the 55-mile-a-gallon range. We're talking about that today with John McElroy. He is an automotive journalist and the host of Autoline Daily. And we're talking about some of the challenges this represents for the auto industry and whether or not they're going to be able to actually achieve some of these figures. John McElroy, before the break, we were talking a little bit about some of the loopholes or credits or however you want to phrase it. And back in 1978, when these CAFE standards first came out, these fuel efficiency standards, hybrids, flex fuel cars, things of that nature, really weren't around. In your estimation, should those cars, the flex fuels, hybrids, electrics, and so on, should they be providing credit towards the overall fleet as a whole?
Yeah, I think they should be, because otherwise there'd be no way for the industry to be able to achieve these standards. And in fact, it's the administration, and not just this one either, that has written the rules in a way to incentivize the auto industry to bring this technology to market. And I think it's likely that we'd see hybrids and plug-ins and even electric cars without that kind of legislation, or the way I should say that the regulations have been written. But we would not see it as widespread as we do right now, in the sense that I think there's something like 28 different hybrids from something like a dozen different brands on the market right now. We probably wouldn't see that breadth of different kinds of hybrids from so many car companies were it not for the way that the CAFE legislation is written.
800-642-1234 is our toll-free number if you would like to join in the discussion. And let's go to the phones right now. We've got some people who would like to join in. Bob starts us off from Wisconsin Rapids. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, you were talking at the beginning of the show here about the diesel power in Europe and that. I mean, that's been prevalent for forever and a day over there. You know, they've been getting 40 to 50 plus miles per gallon in their vehicles, and again, because of the fuel costs and that. And they've been doing that for a long time on their diesels and on their gas engines. A lot of these cars that are sold over there, particularly the ones that Ford and GM and Chrysler that are sold in Europe, are available with engine options that you can't get here in the United States, mostly because they can't certify the engines here in this country. Now, you would think with the environmental, there's a bigger environmental movement in Europe than there is here in this country. So, you know, I mean, they're looking at trying to keep their vehicles running clean over there and everything else. Why aren't these engines available here in this country? I mean, every time the government goes and raises these standards, it seems like we get poorer fuel mileage, partially because they keep dumping more regulations on the heads of the auto manufacturers. Prime example is, I mean, I've got a 93 Dodge truck with a diesel in it. It gets 24 miles to the gallon. My 2003 gets 18. Same motor, same truck, same everything.
Bob, thanks for the call. John McElroy, what about that? European cars, we were talking about this a bit earlier, many of them have been getting great gas mileage, fuel efficiency for a long time. Why aren't they sold here in the U.S.?
Yeah, that's a great question, and one that I get off probably more than any other question at all when it comes to fuel economy.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the difference. People don't realize that the emission standards, automotive emission standards in the United States are the strictest in the world, always have been. The perception is somehow that Europe is stricter than us and more environmentally conscious than us. When it comes to automobiles, that's absolutely not true. And so to be able to meet the U.S. emission standards with a diesel is extremely expensive. In fact, it may even be close to converting a diesel to meet emissions here as expensive it is to convert a car into being a hybrid. And it's a lot. I mean, you're looking at probably in the case of a V6 or a V8 diesel, somewhere on the order of $3,000 just in emission controls equipment to meet the U.S. standards. And while we're seeing right now some of the German automakers, Mercedes, BMW, Volkswagen, and Audi, starting to get kind of successful selling diesels in the United States, it just hasn't hit the kind of critical mass like we've seen it happen in Europe. And it comes down to one particular part of the emission standards, and that's what they call NOx, or nitrous oxides. And in the U.S., we control that far more strictly than even Europe does, because NOx is known to cause smog. And so the point of the matter is it's not a technology issue. It's simply a cost issue. Most consumers will not pay that much more for a diesel engine, which, A, to begin with, is more expensive than a gasoline engine, and then you add several thousand dollars more of emissions equipment. And for a lot of people, that's just too much. They're not going to go with it.
And for those folks with long memories, diesels in America have not always been a success story in cars.
No, they haven't. There's been some really bad ones. General Motors came out with a diesel engine in the early 80s that just was terrible. And there are quite a few people who do remember that. But I think the vast majority of car buyers really don't remember all the bad stuff about diesels. However, they're unaware of these new modern clean diesels that use turbochargers and direct fuel injection and what they call common rail. And they're an amazing engine to drive. They're quiet. They have a lot of power, and they get fantastic fuel economy.
We have a comment from Gary on Facebook who writes, is this agreement physically possible with today's technology, or does it assume or legislate new breakthroughs? And he goes on to say, I'm not sure it's possible or practical to double this figure and still have vehicles which perform the same function as they do today. Is that the sort of the nub of the issue here?
I think it is. And, you know, as I said earlier, this is not a technology issue. I mean, if the government wanted, it could set a 100-mile-per-gallon standard, not just a 54.2-mile-per-gallon standard. But then the question comes, can people afford the technology? And one of the things that greatly worries the auto industry is that hybrids really don't sell very well. As I mentioned before, there's 28 different kinds of hybrids on the market today. You can get small cars and mid-sized cars and big cars. You can get luxury cars that are hybrids. You can get crossovers and SUVs that are hybrids. There's hybrid pickup trucks as well. And yet, here we are since the first hybrid appeared on the market 12 years ago, and there's 28 different kinds from 12 different manufacturers. They only account for a little over 2% of all car sales. So even though there's a lot of media coverage about hybrids, and maybe I should say media hype about them, the point of the matter is that nearly 98% of people who will walk into a showroom this year will not buy a hybrid. And so you have to wonder, how is the industry going to achieve these higher CAFE standards, which really require people to buy a whole lot more hybrids, if they're not buying them.
And traditionally in America, at least, you know, for the past 10 or 15 years or so, mileage has not been much of a factor generally. People are looking for minivans and SUVs and vehicles of that nature that don't really, gas mileage isn't their primary feature.
Well, Americans really, what I should say is, look, everybody wants to get better fuel economy. I've never met a person who said, geez, I wish my vehicle got worse fuel economy. I've never met that. The only thing that truly motivates Americans to go out, and I mean in large numbers, there's a given part of the car buying public who feel it is their duty to do their part for the planet, and they will go out and buy hybrids or high fuel efficiency cars. But the vast majority of Americans will not do that unless gas prices go up and go up quickly. That's when you'll see people absolutely dump their SUVs and rush into small cars. But as soon as gas prices come down or even just moderate a bit, we're back to buying what we want, not what we think we have to buy.
John McElroy is with us this hour. We are talking about new fuel efficiency standards being set by the Obama administration for the auto industry beginning in 2017. And within 15 years of that figure, the president says we can be looking at average fleet economies in the range of 55 miles per gallon. We're talking about some of the challenges of that and taking your calls as well. Is better fuel economy a priority in your part of the world? Do you think it's important for the planet, for cars, that we get this sort of fuel economy? Will it help drive other technologies, cleaner technologies, in terms of driving our cars? 800-642-1234 is our toll-free number. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm here this week filling in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. It is 24 minutes before 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm here this week filling in for Joy Cardine. We're talking about fuel economy for cars and light trucks this hour with John McElroy. He is an automotive journalist and the host of Autoline Daily. We've got a link, by the way, to Autoline Daily webcasts on our program notes and on our Facebook pages. We're talking about the fuel economy standards being proposed by the Obama administration beginning in 2017. Some pretty lofty challenges for auto companies. And we'd like to find out from you whether you think it's the right thing to do. Do we need higher fuel efficiency standards? Will that help drive new technologies? 800-642-1234. And let's start with the phones. Victor joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Victor.
Good morning. Good morning to your guests. One of my concerns is the lobbyists. It's one of the least talked about powers, you know, that you have. You know, they have their special interests and they have their, you know, their survival is at stake. You know, you push for efficiency automobiles. You know, their answer is, you know, the high cost of automobiles, you know, the ones, the gas guzzlers. So how much of an impact will they have on pushing for more fuel-efficient cars? And because that's something that's not talked about a lot.
Okay, so Victor is saying politics is playing a role in all this, I think. And John McElroy, what about that? What about the role of politics, of lobbyists, of big money, frankly? Because when we're talking about automotive manufacturers, there is a lot of money on the table.
There is, but I would say this is one of the most political hot potatoes that there's been in Washington, outside of the whole debt argument, of course. But you've got environmentalists, you've got NGOs, you've got different states. California, for example, has been lobbying intensely for much higher standards. The environmental lobby wanted 62 miles per gallon. At first, the Obama administration was talking about 56.2 miles per gallon, and then it was, debated down to 54 miles per gallon. But there has been constituencies on both sides, not just automakers, but their suppliers. Car dealers have been involved in this. As I mentioned, environmentalist NGOs have been involved in this, as well as a number of states. So there's, believe me, all sides have been represented in this argument.
And when all sides are represented in an argument, I mean, you do wind up with some compromise in this case, you know, 55 miles a gallon or so. Do you expect, because all of a sudden, you know, in the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of movement on this. Is it your sense that things are going to slow down a little bit? You've got that escape clause written in 2021 or so. Are we going to take a break here and kind of let these things settle down a bit?
No, I don't think so, because, you know, it takes the auto industry roughly 3 to 3.5 years to completely design and tool up and come out with a car. So they've got to start literally right now for the cars that are going to be coming out in 2016, 2017 that have to meet these standards. So the race is on literally for the auto industry right now to start developing the vehicles and the technologies that will enable them to be able to meet these standards. So there's no sitting around waiting to see what will happen in 2020-21. They've got to move immediately.
And let's talk about money for a second, because a lot of the auto manufacturers, you know, you think of General Motors or Chrysler, you know, a couple years ago, they were sort of on death's door. And now they've got to make a significant investment in this and everything else that they do. I mean, do they have the money, the funding to pull this off? And how does that play out on the other end, on the consumer side of things? What's this going to do if I need to buy a new car in 3 or 4 or 5 years?
Yeah. Look, the automakers have to spend billions of dollars every year in new products and technology. They don't have a choice. That's the price of being competitive in the marketplace. Even if there were no government regulations, they would be spending close to the same kind of money that they need to do to meet these fuel economy standards. What they worry about is whether consumers will actually go out and purchase these cars. And while there's all kinds of polls of the American public that say, yes, we want more fuel-efficient vehicles and we will happily pay more money for them, as I pointed out earlier in the program, hybrid sales are a little over 2% of the market. So even though people will tell the pollsters they're very interested in hybrids and would pay more money to buy them, in fact, a point when they get into the dealership, that's not what they do. So that's where the industry is really worried, is if they're forced to come out with vehicles that get much higher fuel economy and cost more money because of that, will the public buy them in sufficient numbers to be able to meet these standards? That's the big worry in the industry.
Let's go to David. David joins us now in Eau Claire. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
You know, just a quick comment. It seems to me that that while our government is doing everything it can to increase these standards, that there's a sort of a lack of accountability. You know, I travel a fair amount, and you know, with the amount of vehicles that our federal government puts on the road between our mail delivery vehicles and any other federal agency vehicle that they drive, it would seem to me that our government could put in a large enough order to one of these manufacturers to get this ball rolling a lot quicker than it is. And I'll take my comment off the air. Thanks.
David, thanks for the call. John McElroy, the government should put its money where its mouth is.
And in fact, the government does do that. The Obama administration is making sure that a good chunk, and I can't quote the percentage off the top of my head, but a good chunk of the federal government's purchases of government vehicles have to be hybrids. And in fact, they're even putting in orders for electric vehicles and plug-in hybrids as well. But I think the caller raises another issue that I'd like to talk about. Passenger cars and light trucks use about 40% of all the oil in this country. So we're only trying to regulate that 40%. We have no fuel efficiency standards for airplanes or ships or trains or heavy trucks or even delivery trucks or agricultural equipment or off-road equipment or anything else in our economy that uses oil. And it seems unlikely that we will ever reduce our dependence on oil or even imported oil if we just make it so that only passenger cars and light trucks bear the burden of trying to reduce it. We're regulating 40% of consumption and ignoring the other 60%.
And how does that argument play out in Washington?
Well, you know, the auto industry is an easy industry to go after. And so that's exactly what happens. And, you know, I don't think that anyone has really raised the issue of trying to force other industries or other sectors in the transportation industry to bear its load in trying to become more efficient. Certainly not to the degree like we see with the CAFE, the corporate average fuel economy regulations that the auto industry faces.
Is there a feeling, do you think, that at least in other parts of the transportation world, that just the natural price of fuel is going to rise, probably most likely, that'll just sort of be a natural check on that, that people will have to become more efficient?
Well, certainly when you get into large fleet owners of trucks and delivery vans and the like, they're very conscious of fuel efficiency. So if they can use less fuel, it absolutely can help them be more profitable or definitely keep their costs down. So they are motivated to do that. But like I said, there are no fuel efficiency standards that they have to meet anywhere comparable to what automakers who make passenger cars and light trucks have to meet.
Any moves afoot to change that?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, the government does put out goals more on the emissions side for heavy trucks. And again, when you get into CO2 legislation, anything that forces an automaker or a truck maker to reduce CO2 generally means that they have to have better fuel efficiency, because that's really about the only known way right now to reduce CO2 is simply just burn less fuel, meaning get better fuel economy.
Let's head back to the phones right now. Tom is with us from Mequon. Hi.
Hi. Well, I'm for better fuel economy. Honestly, I am. But I think it's a matter of freedom and choice that's been taken away again from the U.S. consumer by forcing this mandate on us. I think it's a good thing to make these cars available. And for people who want to buy them, God bless them, let them buy them. But to say that you have to buy them, and really that's what they're saying, because to meet those, they're going to have to be dropping, you know, vehicles left and right. And I think, again, it shows when government gets involved with so many things, not everything, but some, especially cars, that really the outcome is bad. Hybrids, for instance, are a joke. The basic four-cylinder versions of most of those vehicles get as good a mileage, if not close, and are a lot cheaper to maintain in the long run. And there's still a question is, where are those batteries going to go? Who's going to take them?
And so, Tom, what role should the government play in, you know, fuel economy, environmental standards, that sort of thing?
Well, I think, honestly, it should be making it. This is a large country. We're not Europe. We're spread out. We need inexpensive energy. That's what it should be focusing on, is the fuel that's, or the oil that's taken out of this country should be staying in this country. It should not be going in the world market, and should be kept at a reasonable cost to the U.S. Buyer. I think this also shows that when this goes through, you're going to see $8 a gallon, because the U.S. government is going to put the taxes on it, because there won't be as much gas sold or diesel fuel, so they'll be making less money. So you're going to see $8, and it's going to be from the U.S. government on taxes to make up for it. So we're going to get stung either way, and we're going to have these small, less safe cars. And that's another reason why the European cars are not brought here, because they cannot meet the safety standard either of the crash test. And that's another reason why they get the 50 miles per gallon and the stuff here that's the sold here does not.
All right, Tom, lots of issues there. And John McElroy, let's start with that freedom of choice issue. Does this limit consumers' freedom of choice?
I don't think it necessarily limits freedom of choice. I mean, there's so many different kinds of vehicles out there, and there will be going forward. The real question comes down to cost. And, you know, like I said before, we could even mandate a 100-mile-per-gallon standard. We've got the technology to do that, but people probably would not be able to afford the vehicles. And that's the crux of the issue here, is the government stepping in and saying this is what vehicles have to achieve may not really dovetail with what people want to buy. I don't think it will limit choice, but it will definitely force people to spend a lot more money for the vehicles that they want to buy.
Let's take a break and take a look at the weather. And when we return, we'll finish up the hour and continue our discussion on improved fuel economy for cars, beginning Well, beginning pretty quickly. Wisconsin weather for today, it is going to be hot and humid throughout the state. Look for a chance of some severe storms in the northern two-thirds of the state this morning. Highs will be in the mid-80s to mid-90s around Wisconsin today. Tonight, it is going to be partly to mostly cloudy, with a chance of some rain in the southeastern part of the state. Lows back down into the 60s. And then tomorrow, it'll be continued sunny and warm, but a little bit cooler than today. Highs will mostly be in the 80s around Wisconsin. Around Wisconsin right now, it's 74 in Green Bay. It is 70 in Superior, 70 in Wausau. Oshkosh reports 76. It's 73 in Eau Claire. It is 81 in La Crosse, 78 in Madison. And in Milwaukee, it is 76. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes before 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 7, by the way, we'll be talking about the debt ceiling. We'll get two takes on that and yesterday's last-ditch effort to pass that plan. It's all coming up after 7. For the rest of this hour, we are continuing our discussion on higher fuel standards for the U.S. auto industry. John McElroy is with us, an automotive journalist and the host of Autoline Daily. Let's head back to the phones right now. Joe joins us from Menominee. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, good morning, guys. I've had a Prius now for about 4 years, and one thing I've noticed is that when I'm driving, as I commute to work and drive in the Twin Cities, I get typically between 60 and 70 miles per gallon when I get back on the interstate to go home over in Wisconsin. It averages out around 54, 53 miles per gallon. So I don't think it's widely known, and part of the issue is maybe the way we put mileage expectations on the stickers on new cars. I'd also like to respond to the prior caller who said that the hybrids are a joke. I'm an engineer, been in automotive most of my life, and one thing about the Prius is that its potential hasn't yet been really fully evaluated, because there are three technologies that the Japanese managed to bring to the market that the American automotive industry could not: the battery, the variable speed transmission, and the electric motor, gasoline motor interface. So I think these are powerful contributions in science and technology whose value has not yet been achieved.
Joe, thanks for the call. And John McElroy, there you go, a fan of hybrids.
Yeah, look, the Prius is a fantastic car, and in my experience, too, it consistently delivers an average of 50 to 52 miles per gallon, but it's the only hybrid that sells well. The caller mentioned that, you know, the Americans weren't able to match what the Japanese have done. Well, guess what? Toyota and Nissan and the rest of the Japanese haven't matched what Toyota has done. Heck, nobody else has. There are other very good hybrids on the market. They simply do not sell well. I can't explain exactly why that is, but that's the point of the matter. As I said, the Prius sells in decent numbers. It's not the best-selling vehicle out there by any stretch, but it is a good-selling vehicle. But when you add up all hybrid vehicles, they're a little over 2% of the total market. There's all different kinds of hybrids that can be bought. The technology is a known technology. It works. In fact, it can work wonderfully well. But the American public hasn't bought them. And guess what? The hybrids don't sell very well in Europe. They don't even sell all that well in Japan, with the exception of the Prius.
We have a Facebook comment here. My Prius gets 51 miles to gallon on a good day, but I have read that from birth to death, a Hummer has a smaller ecological footprint than a Prius when you factor in the technology and some of the toxic chemicals in hybrid batteries. And I don't know whether you know anything about that, but it does kind of point out the complexity of trying to measure all of this.
Well, and, you know, no, a Hummer does not have a smaller ecological footprint, but it does get a whole lot closer than most people would realize. And the reason for that is, we're only measuring, in this discussion so far, miles per gallon. What we're not taking into account is all the energy that it takes to make a hybrid or any other kind of vehicle, electric included. The batteries are very energy intensive to manufacture. The power electronics that go into that vehicle are very expensive to energy expensive to manufacture. A greater question is, what about end of life, the recycling of it? currently there's almost no recycling centers in the United States that can handle nickel metal hydride batteries that are in hybrids. There's even fewer, in fact, there may even be none that can handle the lithium ion batteries that are going into electric cars. And when you look at the total life cycle energy usage, which, and I would argue that's what this country really should be looking at, is life cycle energy, not just the miles per gallon. Because another example is, to get cars to get better fuel economy, if you can make them lighter, that's the fastest way that you can improve fuel economy. So we're seeing many automakers using more aluminum in their cars. But aluminum is very energy intensive to manufacture and very energy intensive to recycle. And if you measure it on a life cycle basis, steel actually uses less energy overall than aluminum does, even though if you have a car that has a lot of aluminum in it, it will get more miles per gallon. So we really need to stand back and look at the big issue here of what are we truly trying to achieve? Do we want to reduce our dependence on imported oil, especially reduce our dependence on any kind of fossil fuel, or do we simply want to get cars that have better miles per gallon? And those two goals are not necessarily do not necessarily go together.
Do you see any moves that would indicate that kind of discussion could take place? I mean, miles per gallon seems like an easy way to look at it. I mean, it's complex in its own way, for sure, but when you start talking about other things, life cycles, it adds a whole other layer to this whole discussion.
There are some, forward thinkers in both the environmental community and in the engineering community in the auto industry who are talking about this, but I have heard of no move to, incorporate this kind of thinking in legislation or regulation.
Let's take a quick call from Linda, who joins us from Bristol. Hi, Linda. You've only got about a minute or so.
Okay. Well, my quick comment was that I believe in personal accountability, and although it would never pass the Republican portion of the government, I would like to see some taxes levied based on the miles per gallon that your vehicle gets and the amount of miles that you drive. Therefore, if you drove a Hummer and you were driving 50,000 miles a year, you'd pay at a much, much higher rate than you would if you were driving a Prius and, say, 10,000 miles a year. And that would be checked when you renewed your sticker for your driver's license and whether you did it based on set ranges or individual miles or whatever. I think, again, you have to make people personally accountable, and it irritates the heck out of me when I hear people say, well, I have the right to drive what I want to drive. I'm paying for the gas that fuels my car, and I don't think it's fair that everybody should be paying the same price if you're not being, environmentally responsible, et cetera. I drive a Mini Cooper, and I chose it because of the gas mileage.
And they're fun. Linda, thanks for the call. And John McElroy, you've only got about 30 seconds or so to wrap up, I'm afraid. But is this debate going to continue, or are we going to see the end of it for a while?
No, I don't think we'll see the end of this debate. It'll simmer down a little bit now because we've got a new round of regulations coming in that'll presumably bump fuel efficiency up to 54 miles per gallon. But you bet we'll be arguing about this for years to come.
Well, John McElroy, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Gene, thanks so much for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
John McElroy has been with us, an automotive journalist and host of Autoline Daily. We've got a link, by the way, to Autoline Daily webcasts on our program notes and on our Facebook page if you'd like to check those out. If you'd like a copy of this program, go to our website at WPR.org and you can look at our web archives. The program was produced by Rob Ferret. We had on-air production from Chris Molina, and we had on-air help from Bill Martins. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.